If you're going to make a mistake, play it loud and proud. Mess up spectacularly so we know what to work on.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan.
Welcome, friends, to another episode of Creative Chats. This is the podcast for artist makers and content creators where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. Thank you so much for joining me today. I always love hearing feedback from you guys that you're enjoying these episodes. It just helps me continue to do what I do. And quite honestly, I've shared this before. I would do this anyway, even if it was just for myself, because I love having these conversations. But knowing that I can record them and share them with you guys and have them be a resource for you, have them be helpful to you in your own journey as you try to either make a living or excel in your creative expression, that just means the world to me. So thank you so much for those of you who reached out to me and those of you who have left reviews and ratings for the podcast. Just means the world. So thank you. Also, really quickly, if you are interested in some creative coaching with me, you can go to mikebrennan.me/coaching and you can sign up to let me know that you're interested in maybe hourly coaching or long-term coaching with me. And if you're somebody who has maybe you felt stuck, you know, you feel like you're not getting traction in your creative expression, or you have a project that you're trying to accomplish and you just need some outside help. We all find ourselves in those places at some time or another where we just get to the end of ourselves and we don't either have the resources, we don't have the connections, we don't have the perspective or the knowledge that we need to move forward. And so if that's something that you feel like you need right now in where you are in your journey, and you feel like I could be the person to help you, I would love to come alongside you and help you with some of those things and help you just really be able to move forward and produce the work that you really feel like you need to, and the work, quite honestly, that other people are waiting for from you. Don't be that person who sits on that idea forever and ever and ever. Don't be the person who says, you know, one day I'll write that book, one day I'll launch that podcast, one day I'll get my work into a gallery, or, you know, I'll be able to create this, you know, certain set of paintings or music or video, dance, whatever it is that your creative expression is, don't delay. And so, again, you can go to mikebrennan.me/coaching to find out some more information about creative coaching. Now, for this week's episode, I bring to you my friend, Carrie Wilkerson. Now, just a word here. Carrie is amazing. And some people have been asking me, like, Mike, why do you have so many creative entrepreneurs, business leaders, marketing professionals? Why do you have those types of people on your podcast, as well as visual artists and musicians and more of what you would normally think of as the creative types? Well, first off, if you've been listening for any amount of time, you know that I believe everyone is creative. And it's not just those who seem obvious, like those who draw and paint and create music. But I believe that sometimes our creativity comes in forms of how we create systems, or how we think about business, how we talk about what we do, in other words, marketing. There are people who create assets and content for businesses, for their own business and to help other people. And quite honestly, as an artist and as someone who went to art school and has been in and around the arts for most of my life, I recognize that this is a place where we are lacking as artists to have that business sense. Like, business was kind of always a dirty word when I was really fresh in art school and even getting out. It was something that I was like, I don't need to know that stuff. I'm just going to work for somebody else. And, you know, I don't really need to worry about how to set up a system for business, how to track income, how to think about leadership and some of those things. But quite honestly, those are very important skills for us to have, especially as creative people, and especially if we're looking to make a living off of our creativity and our art. And we need to continue to lean into that and surround ourselves with some people who are much more knowledgeable about these things, people who can help, and stop thinking of ourselves as merely artists, but also as creative entrepreneurs, as small business owners, because really, that's what we are. And along with that comes the challenge of how do we operate like that? How do we put systems in place that help us and manage to help us to grow as people, as a business, and in what we need to offer to the people around us? And so today's guest, Carrie Wilkerson, man, she is a powerhouse. I love this lady. She, I met her at a conference and immediately was just like, I need to find out more of who she is and I need to keep tabs on her. And Carrie is a best-selling author with her book, The Barefoot Executive. She's an international speaker. She's been featured on CNN and Fox Business News in Success and Entrepreneur magazines. She's been named by Forbes as a top small business influencer. I mean, we're talking about heavy hitters here. Carrie is somebody who, you know, she is a thought leader. You hear that term often. Well, Carrie is someone who helps small businesses with strategies and productivity and just knowing what current trends to follow and how to implement these things in such a way that really help that person, that business owner, be successful in what they're trying to accomplish. She's a cheerleader for those businesses and for those people. And so I know you're gonna enjoy this conversation with Carrie Wilkerson, so I'm gonna get out of the way. And here is my chat with Carrie. Carrie Wilkerson, thank you so much for joining me today. I love seeing your smiling face.
Thanks. You know, we're calling that vitamin C these days. Sometimes you just need somebody smiling at you. So if that's what I'm good for lately, then hey, I'm all for it.
That's awesome. So thinking back to when we first met, it was at a live event, Jeff Goins' Tribe event.
Yep.
And it was actually the first Tribe event that I had gone to. And you were one of the first people who came out on stage. And I was like, who is this woman? She's incredible. Like you came out and then like I could tell you were like, okay, I'm going for it. This is it. You kicked your shoes off. You were like digging in and you're like, it was like, whoa. Incredible.
Well, there's a backstory to that. I had mono. Nobody knew that. I had been in Hawaii doing a keynote for several days. And so I had already committed to Jeff before I committed to Hawaii. Hawaii called and was well paying. And then I said, oh, I can only do it if you fly me first class on this flight to land at this time so that I can sleep, so that I can be rested and deliver, you know, for Jeff. And long story short, the flight canceled. So they had to fly me standby, middle seat, back row. Mm. I don't sleep on planes anyway. Mm. So a red eye. So I literally got off the flight. It was pouring rain. I don't know if you remember, pouring rain. And I literally had time to like go shower, change clothes, and go on stage. So I was sleep deprived. I was emotional. I had mono. And now when I look at that tape, I go, oof, I look so angry. Like I don't ever use that reel for anything. Cause I go, oof, I have such an edge. Now I was passionate about what I was saying, but I normally would probably couch it a little sweeter. But yeah, I remember that is when we were talking about creatives should not apologize for charging.
Yeah.
Creatives have an obligation to pay their bills too. Creatives have an obligation and a gift, and we shouldn't apologize for our craft. We absolutely should not.
Yeah. Maybe I didn't realize the angry part because I'm from New Jersey, New York area. We're always angry here anyway. So,
well, I'm a Southern girl. So normally, Normally it's like sweet tea with some cayenne pepper, but that was a whole lot of cayenne pepper, very little sweet tea at that point. So, I guess.
That's amazing. So, for the sake of our listeners, can you just tell us like bird's eye view, who are you? What do you do?
Yeah, so I am a, first of all, mom of four amazing kids and wife and community member, daughter, sister, all those things. I'm just the girl next door, quite honestly, in the cul-de-sac. And I started an at-home business 21 years ago in order to be home with my two adopted children from the foster care system. I became a mom overnight and it changed everything for me. So I created a business, not because I had a big idea, not because I had a big mission, but simply because I needed to pay my bills while I was parenting at home. And that has now evolved. 21 years later, I've written a book called The Barefoot Executive. I started getting asked to go speak. I never intended to be a speaker. I never intended to be a thought leader or guru or anybody's role model. I just really wanted to stay home and pay the bills for those kids. We've added two more. And that's who I am. So I speak, I encourage, I'm a professional cheerleader of sorts. I work with small business owners on how to grow their small business, how to create a business based around their priorities instead of sandwiching in their priorities into when their business will let them fit it in. So that's what I do. That's who I am. And these days I'm doing a whole lot of that at home. Again, virtually encouraging the masses and using the platform that way. And I still have four kids, two still at home, two grown, and we've been doing it that way for over 20 years. So here's hope for you creatives. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I love that you said that even your creativity was expressed because there was a need that arose and you're like, we need to figure this out. Yep. We need a solution. And that, you know, presents your using creativity in a different way. And I talk about that a lot on the podcast of just how, you know, we need to figure out how to leverage creativity across a wide variety of things, not just our skill set that comes to our craft.
Right.
But in how we do things.
Yeah. And I would also say that creativity doesn't have to be your craft. So a lot of people get stuck in the trap of, I want to pursue my passion. Well, great, but your passion might not be profitable. But how can you work your passion into what is profitable? So maybe you take your skill set or what you're trained at and incorporate your creativity through that. So I am a creative, I am a performer, I'm a trained vocalist. But how does that work with small business? I created a publishing company, a newsletter company. I've had so many different kinds of companies that either funded my creativity or that I let my creative brain help me either market those things or integrate into those things. And now, of course, I'm a stage speaker, which I always assumed I would be a singer. I never in a million years thought I would be an on-stage speaker. And I would probably say I'm a little more of an entertainer than just a straight speaker because I do probably 15, 20 minutes of some comedy while I'm speaking and integrate a lot of different things. But I didn't pursue entertainment, even though that's a passion of mine. So there's a fine line there, Mike. We can't always get paid for our passion. Sometimes, especially in times of recession, especially in times of, you know, debt, especially in times of just making ends meet, we have to say, what's my skill set? What have I been trained to do? What is valid in the marketplace? And then we use our creativity to fuel that, not necessarily to fund that.
Yes. Gold. Oh my goodness.
Somebody write that down. I won't remember that later. Write that down.
And, you know, I think specifically when, you know, for artists, when I have a lot of conversations with fellow artists, the business side of things is difficult. That's the place where there's a lot of just insecurity and a lack of knowledge. And, you know, artists are taught to work on their craft, work on finding their voice and their style, and then figuring out, okay, well, what is it that I want to say? And how is it that I want to say? And what you said before, as far as, you know, just because you create something doesn't necessarily mean that there's a market for it, that somebody's going to pay for it, that it should be even shackled with the responsibility of paying some bills, because then it can take on a life that it was never meant to be.
Right.
And it's no longer a passion thing. And then it becomes like a have-to thing.
Right.
And you can kill the thing that you love because you've smothered it with this role that it never meant to have.
Exactly. When I went to college, I studied music and it killed it for me. It did. It took me a couple of years before I started singing again, quite honestly, because I had to analyze all the mechanics. And now that's not the same. That's not true of everyone that studies music at college. But for me, yeah. I wanted to communicate. And so that was hard for me. But I have a daughter who's very artistic. And so when she'll paint because she's loving to paint or draw because she's loving to draw, and then if she decides to sell it later, it's often with more ease than when she's creating to sell.
Yes.
There's a difference. I have a daughter who bakes. My 12-year-old is a very, very avid baker, and she loves to bake and create. When people start ordering things, it quashes her. She doesn't love to create that way. She doesn't want to create, you know, on demand. And, you know, I have a daughter that sings and does all those kind of things. And every time I say, you know, you could probably side hustle for singing telegrams online or singing whatever, she just refuses and rejects it because she wants that to be her art and yeah. not what funds her. So, you know, we have to recognize those things. We have to be self-aware. We also have to be a little less entitled. Well, I'm a good painter. I should be able to paint for money. Maybe. But there may be a niche in the marketplace that funds better than canvases. Maybe you need to take it to murals. Maybe you need to take it to downtowns. Maybe you need to do event illustration, like the brilliant thing that you do. Incidentally, you guys, I do have a piece of art on the wall. Hang on, let me step away.
Awesome. I love that you're showing this right now.
That's I think awesome. You're probably not supposed to step away during an That's interview, okay. but I want to show everybody that I practice what I preach. And I did invest in this amazing art right here. That's me speaking at that conference you mentioned. And I think maybe this event was a catalyst for you when you started going to event illustrating.
Absolutely.
Yes. So it's not to say sometimes those catalyst moments don't happen. They sometimes do, but you have to pay your bills in the meantime. While you're looking for the great opportunities.
Yeah. And there are things that, like, in case in point, when you talk about that being a catalyst for me, I was at that conference and this is something that I, quote, just was doing and didn't know that this could be something that could be a service. Like, it just never dawned on me because I was so close to it. And right. I wasn't thinking in terms of like, what's another business dream that I could have? Like it that wasn't on the radar. And so it wasn't until I entered into a conversation with somebody at that event, actually, when they said, hey, this thing that you're doing here, like right now, that's actually a business. That's a service. People find value in that. And I was kind of like, what?
And
like,
then next step was when you posted this picture of me, I didn't just automatically circulate it. I said, I want that. And I was so proud of you. You didn't even know that was a test. I was so proud of you when you said, this size is this much, this size is this much, this size is this much. I went, he was listening to my speech. He did it. And I paid for this, you guys. I invested in this because it was of value to me. I have all kinds of pictures of me on stage on this wall. It's my motivational wall when things are hard. And this is right there with it. And I invested in it, so I value it. If he had just sent me the download for free, I probably never would have printed it out. I probably never would have done anything with it. But you opened the door, you tested the market, and it was valid and it was valuable. So I love that. I think that's really smart.
And that was the thing too, was I wanted to make sure that I was applying what I heard you say too. And I was like, this is an immediate application point. And if I don't do this right now, I'm never going to do it because it's going to get forgotten. It's going to get tucked away. And that's it.
Free is often filed and forgotten. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just is what it is.
Mm. So much good stuff already. Wow. I can't believe this. So I would love to just let's roll things back through the years. Okay. Now we're playing the tape, right? And the song's coming on. Carrie, as a child, what was a creative expression? Like, you've mentioned music already, so I'm thinking maybe there's something there, but maybe not. What's a creative expression that you had as a kid, or maybe a game or some experience that you had centered around creativity where you were like, this is lighting me up right now. I need to do more of this.
Yeah. So I sang a lot. I sang at home. My mom, I always say I cut my teeth on the piano bench. My mom would play and I was just always there around her and singing with her sometimes and singing on my own. My dad was a pastor. So I had this stage a lot. I remember now the Lord just brought this back to my memory recently and I got so tickled. I laughed at myself. I remember very distinctly, mimicking talk shows and mimicking game show MCs. Like I would do all the voices. And so it was always about a mic, but I was facilitating conversations and facilitating communication. And so I look at that now and I go, oh, dang. Okay. Wow. And I would stand in front of the mirror in the bathroom, which was a big deal because we had one bathroom in our whole house and there was five of us. So I would commandeer the bathroom and I was the youngest and I was always getting yelled at for that. But I would use the Right Guard aerosol can of my dad's and I would MC and then I would move over here. I'd be Bob Barker. I would be Richard Halliburton. I would be, Warburton, whatever his name was. I would be those guys and I would mimic talk shows. My grandmother watched Phil Donahue. You know, my mom didn't like Phil, but my grandmother watched it. So I would, I saw myself as a communicator and a facilitator, and I saw myself in those roles. So that was a creative form of play that I had. And then when I got into school, some leaders just rise up. And every time we had a circle group or something, inevitably, I was always chosen as a leader. Inevitably, I was leading a group on the playground. Inevitably, I was facilitating communication or helping people with their ideas. So I can look back now and see all that. I had no idea at the time that would be that, but I see it. And it's very clear to me now that that was a creative play that I used and that I did. So, that's kind of fun. I would mimic the radio shows that I heard, those kind of things. I mean, I was not a drawer ever. I was not a sculptor. I was not into art much. It was always music, plays, words, writing, books and books and books that I've written, since I was little. It was always words. Words is what it has always been, my creativity.
Mm. I love that because you can look back and you're self-aware enough to be able to trace that back and go, I see the connection between what I'm doing now and what it was that was just play when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because when you're a kid, you're not thinking about like, I'm going to build an income stream around this, blah, blah, blah. That's out the window. You want to have fun. You want to express yourself in what comes naturally
because
you haven't been shackled with anything from anybody at that point that says, no, don't do that way, or you're not talented enough, or whatever the voices that eventually come that knock us down, right? All that is coming from a much purer place when we're a kid like that. The other thing I got to laugh is that when you're talking about different microphones and stuff, right? Like the aerosol can, I had, this is going to date myself, but that's okay. Back when Donnie and Marie were on TV and they had like a toy line and they had the actual microphone that would work from Donnie and Marie. And so I remember having that with my friend who lived across the street. And we used to like pretend stuff.
Watch Donnie and Marie. We used to watch the sisters who were all Mandrell sisters. Watch Mandrell sisters. Yeah. We watched Lawrence Welk, that dates my parents, I think, more than it dates me, but that's the kind of stuff that we watch. So it's no wonder, that creativity came kind of natural to us. We were a little bit immersed in it. I will say, I didn't have a microphone. I didn't need one because I created it out of whatever I picked up in my hand. But I will say that all of my kids, all four of them, no matter what their gifts or skills, I have trained them on the mic. What I mean by that is I know a lot of people that can't wait to get a baseball in their kids' hands. I know a lot of people that can't wait to get a paintbrush in their kids' hands. I really want my kids not to be fearful of a mic. So even my special needs son, even with my youngest who doesn't like to be the center of attention, I've taught them to present, I've taught them to interview, I've taught them to introduce, I've taught them to sing, I've taught them to speak, to recite. I've taught them to have no fear of this thing. This thing holds no power over you. So I have had mine have all had a mic in their hands since they were little bitty. Doesn't mean they seek it out. Two of them do, absolutely. But it doesn't mean they seek it out, but it means they don't fear it. They don't dread it. So I think that's been really, really helpful. They're the first ones to stand up and go, oh, well, nobody else will do that. I'll do that. Of course, I'll do that. They were filming videos and creating things yesterday, two of them that are still here at the house. And I think that's a valuable skill. So yeah, I think creating can take different forms and you can see it way back when. I used to always sing. And then my dad, when I was about 8 to 9 years old, he said, okay, baby girl, it's time for you to stop performing it's time for you to start leading in worship. And it didn't mean he let me have the whole service. It meant he said, you have to introduce your song with a scripture or a story or something relevant to the congregation. No, Daddy, I don't want to talk. I don't want to talk. The house of worship is not a place for performance. The house of worship is to bring people to a heart state for worshiping, not to point to you, but to point, you know, vertically. And so I fought that. And he said, okay, then you cannot, you're old enough now to be self-aware enough now that you cannot perform. This is not a concert hall. And so whether you're a faith-based person or not, just listen to the story here. So finally I said, okay, I'm going to try this. And so I blame my dad for the fact that I can look at a congregation or look at a circumstance or look at the news or look at what's happening in culture, and I can make it relevant to something that maybe helps communicate to people. And that was a form of creativity that my dad, who would say that he was shy and not a great communicator, he taught me the importance of that. And I believe my speaking acumen, my speaking ability, and my skill set started then when I started looking at ways to make things relevant to the microphone, not speaking to hear myself talk, not speaking to establish my authority, because I certainly at 8 or 9 didn't have any. But by the time I was 18, right before I went to college, he did give me the whole church service for kind of a concert and ministry opportunity. And I was able to tell stories in between and scriptures in between. And it was really a refining process. So that's another one of those defining moments that I wasn't making a dime. And it was just an opportunity that I had that raised up that I took advantage of in order to make my skills better. So.
Yeah. I love that, because I hear in there a gift that your father gave you in that valuable lesson and opportunity. And then the gift that you've passed along to your children of this microphone is a tool. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid of it. Figure it's out how to leverage
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you said you wanted to talk about creativity, I did, because I'm a speaker, I did kind of come up with three points based on creativity, when it's appropriate, why it's appropriate, how it's appropriate. And I think there are three ways that we use creativity, whether we class ourselves as creatives or not. Some people eschew that term, or whether we revel in the fact that we're creators. I would say that there are three tendencies that we have and wish to create. So can I share those? Is that okay?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So number one is we use creativity to cope. We use creativity as a coping mechanism. They're all C points. If you guys are taking notes, they're all C points, because I'm a speaker and a preacher's kid. Okay. Cut me some slack. We use it to cope. And what I will say is, I remember when my college girl was home, and I could always tell when she was processing through things, she always practiced her flute more and practiced her piano more, always. And now she sketches more. The during the viral isolation that we had, I noticed that when I challenged my kids who were stuck at home and not in school to create something every day, whether that was something to give to someone or something to post online or something to frame, hang on the wall, when I challenged them to create daily, it helped them to cope. They didn't see the switch in their brain. I saw the switch in their brain. My house is full of coloring pencils and markers. Now, remember, I said, I'm not artistic. I'm a DIYer. I remodel, I decorate, but I can't draw a stick figure. It's not my gift, and I don't want to. And I don't want to get better at it. It's not my thing. But my house is full of creative tools, so that if they get the urge to paint or sketch or draw or color, we've got coloring books, we've got, you know, all kinds of things. So we use it as coping. Lots of musicians and comics and actors and authors during the isolation and during the depression and during hard times, you will see them creating and sharing their art and their craft more. And it's not necessarily for their audience. A lot of time it's for them. We tease my mom a lot that we always know when she's stressed out because she hums. She would tell you, I'm not humming. Yes, you are, Mom. You're humming. We always knew. Doing the dishes, we would hear her hum and start to sing. And we could always tell that was a coping for her. So that's one time that we create. And that's one reason that we create, is to cope. Don't ignore that. Don't think that's privilege. Don't think it's silly. Don't think it's extraneous. Don't dismiss somebody else's creativity because it looks different than yours. For me, it might be words. So I'm doing a whole lot of online videos and a whole lot of speaking and a whole lot of talking right now, while visual artists are doing a whole lot of this right now. So for coping. The other reason we create and should create and must create is to improve our craft. So craft is your second C. You have to get better. You have to do, you know, we sometimes go through, and I would say this is probably junior high, high school, sometimes even college. We go through these stages where we only want to perform. We don't want to practice. We only want to produce. We don't want to perfect. I'll never remember all those P points. So somebody write this down and send this to me. We want to be on the stage, not on the sidelines, getting better, right? Nobody wants to be redshirted. Nobody wants to be on the bench. But sometimes, you know, shooting those free throws, like Michael Jordan is so famous for doing over and over and over again in the dark when nobody was around and when, you know, his family, I'm sure, was going crazy from the sound of the thump outside. What you do in the darkest hours is what changes you, right? What you do in the unseen moments, I think, is a Jordan quote. What you do in the unseen moments is what changes you and perfects you. So you have to do your craft to be better at your craft. You have to be willing to mess up in order to avoid messing up future days. You have to give bad speeches in order to give good speeches. You have to produce wrong art in order to get to the right art. One of my daughters loves makeup artistry, and she has to mess up and erase it sometimes in order to get better and better at it. So the reason you have to be creative and you can't stop creating and you're obligated to create is to get better at your craft. You can't just say, oh, I have a God-given gift and then do this. That's a little bit of a cop-out. And conversely, I get really irritated when people will say to my daughter, who's such an amazing performer, they'll say, oh, you have such a gift. Yes, she has a gift and a tendency, but dang, sister works hard.
Yeah.
She works hard at her craft. I no longer work as a vocalist. I no longer practice my singing. I primarily sing in church and with my kids. And so if somebody says to me, oh, you have a gift, I'll own that. I'll say, thank you. But I'm not skilled like she is, right? The only way to get better and to break through some plateaus and to really be outstanding is to work on your craft. So don't cheat yourself of that step. And also don't be arrogant that you think you don't need that step. Mm-hmm. We know people in the pros in sports. We know every actor that I've ever heard of has a coach, an accent coach, a voice coach, a physical action coach, a trainer, right? We're not too good to not be practicing our craft. The third reason we need to create sometimes is cash flow. Cash flow. Sell your art, create your art, you know, make yourself valuable to serve to other people. So I create words and videos and speeches and things, and that's how I make my living right now. I, you know, have a book that leads to clients. I have coaching programs that help me grow my business. So I use my words and my craft for cash flow. And you can also do the same thing, or you can integrate your craft within your cash flow stream, however that looks for you, or side hustle or whatever. So I would say we create to help with coping with what we're dealing with. We create to get better at our craft, and we create for cash flow. And so wherever you fall on that spectrum, it's all okay. It's all good. It's all necessary. And the final C would be, it's what the creator made you for. You have been given the desire to create. It looks different for everybody. Some people garden and that's their creation. Some people paint their house and decorate their house and that's their creation. Some people cook. Some people preach. Some people sing. Some people draw or paint or sculpt or teach or love on people, or do hand lettering. You know, whatever that is, you were born to create and made to create by your creator. And I think we can ignore that part of ourselves or we start to die a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's huge. Yes. And I think it's sometimes we find ourselves flowing, like that's not a linear thing, right? We flow in and out of those things in different seasons and different times, depending upon what the presenting need is.
Yeah.
And there's overlap too, you know? That's there's so much gold in there. Oh, so good.
Ideally, we integrate it, right? Ideally, yeah. You know, it flows in and out, and creating is just who we are. I know that at times when I'm too busy or too driven in other areas, I know that I will say, haven't done any projects in the house for a while. I haven't remodeled anything or painted anything or DIY'd in a while. And I get irritated with myself for ignoring that part of me. And so I have to schedule it. I have to say, you know, 2 hours on Saturday, I'm going to XYZ. So sometimes when you starve your creativity, you starve your own self. And I don't think that's healthy either. So you have to make sure you're doing that. I have one of mine fights with depression, and I can always tell when the music stops. That's when I know. And so I will just encourage and say, why don't you sing something today? Why don't you go do a TikTok or a live or a something to create some music today? Why don't you go outside and turn your playlist on really loud? Because I know that sometimes creating when you don't want to create increases your endorphins, your serotonin, and makes you want to create more, right? Yeah. We're not always motivated to create. We're not always motivated. Sometimes we have to create until we're motivated. Stephen King says, yeah, I'm motivated. I'm motivated every day between 7 and 1. I sit down at the typewriter and type until I'm motivated to do so, right? So sometimes we have to create in order to motivate. So I think that's important too.
Yeah. And I found that in my own life where I had a 10-year absence basically where I didn't do any art and it really messed with me because like you said, when you're not functioning that way, the way you were created to, there's going to be flags. There's going to be disturbance. And so for me, it led to depression. And then the way out of that was part of that was coming back to my daily art, you know, coming back to a place where I'm like, okay, can I show up today and do 5 minutes, 10 minutes and not think that I have to produce a masterpiece, but just can I do, you know, these 5 minutes, these 10 minutes, do the next day, the next day, the next day, and just keep adding.
Yep.
And this April will be, it's 8 years that I've done every single day, drawing or painting. And so I can attest to the fact of when you show up, when you lean into things for that, things change, things happen. And you, like you said, the momentum that starts to take over because you've developed a habit that starts doing some of the heavy lifting. And so that you can get into the place of creating quicker and you're not always waiting for the muse, you know, the
right. So you just hit the nail on the head. We have to create the routine and the discipline because our feelings and our emotion and our motivation will lie to us.
Yeah.
So we have to create until that shows up, or even if it doesn't show up. What if I only parented on days I felt like it? Or what if I was only married on days I felt like it? Or what if I only got out of bed on days I felt like it? There'd be a whole lot of nothing going on, right? So I think you have to show up with the routine until the habit creates itself so that you can fight through what emotions or circumstances or situations happen to you. James Clear's recent blockbuster book this year is really, really, I'm looking at it right there. I can't see the title of it, but it's Habits.
Right? Atomic Habits.
It's really powerful. And I love following him on Instagram because he's just dropping something every day that's like, dang, that wasn't nice that you're so honest, but okay. Because he talks about the fact that you have to develop that daily discipline so it will kick into gear even when you are in grief or even when you are in poor health or even when you're in economic uncertainty, which we absolutely saw and will see because of, you know, the epidemic, the pandemic that swept the nation, because of recession, because of other things that happen. You have to create those routines and those disciplines. That matters. You have to create that muscle so that you don't always have to do the heavy lifting. The routine will do it for you.
Yeah. And again, just as you said, we have to create those things. That is another discipline of creation. It's not just the, hey, I'm feeling happy. I want to create, you know, something that has to do with my happiness or the feeling, but it's creating systems, creating, you know, things that can help us leverage so that when the feelings come and go, when they flow and we're not just being tossed about, because we don't have that system in place. And so creating those systems to be a help for us, to be a guide for us that we can leverage, that's huge. Because I know a lot of people who they don't have those things in place and they find themselves at the whim of their feelings or their schedules or whatever else. And then they wonder why they're not getting any traction. And years go by and they're just like, I just seem to be stuck. I don't get it. I don't know. And it's like, I try and say, well, you know, where are the places in your life that you've sown those things into place so that they can help you? And a lot of times they're like, yeah, those things aren't in place. And I'm like, right. Well, today is the day where you need to start that, you know?
Right.
So I'm wondering if you have something today, is there an expression that you have that's just yours and that you're just like, this is something I just need to do for my own creativity and that I enjoy doing and that you go back to regularly?
Yeah, I would say I probably default to home projects. First and foremost, that's a way that I am artistic. And I'm also, my dad taught me how to like build and redo and remodel. Two of my brothers are contractors. We just kind of grew up watching dad do that in his spare time. I love, you know, the HGTV shows. I don't have cable, but I watch them, you know, on Netflix when they come on. And so I love to see what's possible and do those kind of things. So I try to do one little thing a week. It's really important for me if it's something I can finish quickly because I don't like the shame of an unfinished project hanging over my head. So it may be something as simple as this, you know, wood wall right there that I did before. That's just like an adhesive fake plank wood wall that I did, and it took too long and it started to weigh on me, right? But I have I'm doing brick in my bedroom on the wall behind my bed. I'll sometimes just decide to paint a few doors, you know, or the front door, or right now I'm working on some things in the backyard because we have an engagement party. As soon as we can schedule a date, we'll be having an engagement party for my daughter. And so we want to do it in the backyard. And anyway, so I try to, at the beginning of the year, I made a list of like 50 projects that I wanted to accomplish in the house. And then I put a list. Do I want to pay to have that done? Do I want to do that? How many weekends will that take, or time slots will that take? And so I tend to default to that. And then a couple of days a week, I'll just give myself permission to turn off all electronics and to put away the to-do list, and maybe 2 hours at night. Two nights a week, I'll flip through magazines, or I'll look at Pinterest, or I'll just feed that creative thought process so that by the time I'm ready to do it, you know, I can do it. I also will, so I think this is part of the creative process too, is even if you guys are watching a YouTube video on how to do something, count that as some of your creative time for the day. It doesn't have to be necessarily producing a big thing every day, but it can be preparing to produce the thing. So I'll watch videos or I'll read blogs. I also, this makes it more budget friendly too. Probably every 2 weeks, I'll order a supply or a tool that goes along with my next project. So I'll have the paint on hand so that when I do have the time or the motivation or the space or the kids gone, you know, okay, I have everything I need. I have no excuses. I'm going to go ahead and, you know, do this now because I can't use money as an excuse at that point. I've already bought it. I can't use preparedness. It's in the closet. So I have a DIY closet that I just amass little things here and there, either when I see them on sale or when I have a little leeway in the budget for that. And that helps feed my creativity too, because that's a little bit of an accountability, right? This tile paint is in here because I'm going to do that shower, right? So those are some of the things that I do and that feed me. I like to create like wood signs and the things I can build. I love to go to those places like the Rustic Brush or any of those wood sign places with my kids, especially because we learn power tools, we learn stain color, we learn patience, we learn stenciling, and we're creating together. We are creators at our very core. And I love feeding that a little bit. I used to cross stitch. My mom quilts. She also is a seamstress. We all three of us know how to sew here. We don't necessarily sew our clothes or anything, but a couple times a year we get out our, you know, machines and we might do pillows or we might do, you know, a little blanket for a doll bed or something, but that feeds our creativity too without being a burden on us.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm hearing in there that there's, you have preparation and then you have the time at which you are actually executing things, which I think is important because too many times I think people think, you know, this stuff has to happen all at the same time. Or what happens is, you know, somebody goes, well, now I have the time to actually do something, or I've made the time to step into this creative thing for myself. But then they get paralyzed because it's like, I don't know what to do. I don't have a list of things. I don't have materials ready. I don't have, you know, by the time I dig stuff out or by the time I do all this, I expend all my energy and effort on that. And then I don't even feel like doing the thing that I said I was going to set out to do in the first place.
Right. Right. So preparedness is important, you know, otherwise, and we try to work on that with my daughter who bakes. Like at the beginning of the week, what are you making on Friday or Saturday? Mm-hmm. Where's your list? What do we have? Go do inventory. What do we have? What do we not have? What equipment do you need? What do we not have? So that by the time the day gets there, she's not then going, oh, I have to run to the store. Oh, I have to go get X, Y, Z. Oh, I wasn't prepared. Oh, I thought I had this. You know, we're having her do that. Same with the musician. Like, do you have your sheet music downloaded? Are you prepared? Do you have your mic set up? Is it charged? Blah, blah, blah. So I do the same thing with my DIY stuff. So it may be that somebody leaves for 2 hours to run to the store and they get back and I've already retiled the fireplace, right? Well, how did you do that? Well, I already had all the stuff. I had it here, right? And so I was prepared so that when the moment hit or when the opportunity arose, I could just create. Like I said earlier, I've always got colored pens, colored markers, easels, canvases, sketch paper. They may go months untouched, some of it. Last night, one of my kids wanted to create. She's not very artistic. She wanted to create. And so I pulled out a coloring book that was affirmations and positive sayings, and then a thing of, you know, sharpened pencils. And she was just happy as a clam that we had it and that it was available while she was in that space and in that energy. So preparedness is huge. Don't decide you want to do makeup artistry, but first you got to, I call that the first I got to. It's like, I want to sit down and do my work, but first let me go fill my coffee. But first I got to put a load of laundry in. But first I got to. You know, handle those first I got to's little by little as you have on your list so that you can just get in and do it when you have the opportunity or when you've scheduled that time. Don't spend all that time sharpening your axe, as we've heard, right?
Yeah.
Don't spend all that time doing that. Sharpen it little by little as you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one last question for you, Carrie. Is there some piece of advice that someone's given you along the way that has been so instrumental in you, in your creativity, in your business?
So much good advice. Yeah. So much good advice. I've made it a habit of studying masters, you know, also of studying people on what not to do. I think probably the best advice, and I can't quote any one person on this, but I've seen it modeled by so many of my role models. And also I've heard it is that failure is not fatal or final. It's just an opportunity to approach things a different way. I have to be more afraid of not trying than of trying and falling or trying and failing. This is why I think we often get to points of desperation before we act, because at that point our back's against the wall and we can't help if we fail or not. We think, how much worse could it possibly get? It's why you hear a lot more 100-pound success stories than 30-pound success stories, or why you hear so many more bankrupt stories than $20,000 in debt stories, right? Because we wait until we don't have an alternative instead of being afraid to look foolish or being, you know, the viral response, the COVID-19 response. I think a lot of politicians and people in leadership were afraid of looking foolish if we overacted. Whereas my thought process was, if we overreact, good. If we don't act enough, fatal. There's no middle ground there. We need to overreact now. And so I like to look at my business the same way. My book is not perfect, was not perfect. There are lots of things I would change and could change. But I was more afraid to not release it and not help the people that it could help at the moment than I was worried about being criticized or negative reviews or those kind of things. You have to be willing to mess up spectacularly. I probably learned that. You know what? I probably learned that from band directors and choir directors in high school. They would say, if you make a mistake quietly, we can't hear you to help you with it. Hmm. If you're going to make a mistake, play it loud and proud. Mess up spectacularly so we know what to work on. So I guess maybe That's where I learned that. I also learned then that your opening number and your closing number need to be your strongest, because that's what people tend to remember. And most people in the audience are not gifted at what you do, and they're not as critical as you think that they are. So I would say if we're going to mess up, let's mess up spectacularly, because that's how we get better. That's how we learn.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Incredible, incredible words. I love that. Love that. So I know it's going to help a lot of the listeners. I'm going to revisit this as well, because, you know, I think that's something that as we continue to show up each day, we need that. We need that voice. We need that prompting to, yes, just go for it. And if we mess up, learn from it and course correct as we go. And everything is always a moving target anyway. We never get to a place where we just set it and forget it, or that we somehow arrive. And so we need to keep implementing these things so that we keep growing, so that we keep putting out into the world the things that we really need to be, because other people need them.
So. Exactly. I think it was Helen Keller that said, life is either a grand adventure or nothing at all. It's a grand experiment. I mean, there is absolute truth in some areas, but there is not an absolute right and wrong way to do what we do and create what we create. And so life is a grand experiment. And I think we have to keep our brush in the paint, so to speak. And we have to keep our souls creating and thinking creatively and looking at what else could happen because of this, or how could I use this to serve, or, you know, whatever that looks like. But yeah, I would say be willing to fail spectacularly. You never know how that's going to be used. You never know what you're going to learn from it. And you never know who might find it really valuable.
So good. So good. Carrie, thank you so much for taking this time today. Real quickly before we go, where can people find you? How can they follow along with your journey?
Yeah, so my name is Carrie, C-A-R-R-I-E, Wilkerson, and that's my name on every social platform. That's the name of my YouTube channel. That's the name of my Facebook page. Go to the business page, not the personal page. Follow me there. I go live a lot. If you go to my website, carriewilkerson.com, you can do free video coaching. There's also a lead generation thing if you want to look up how to monetize your creativity. Lots of great free resources. You can just Google my name and podcast, or Google my name and blogs, and I'll pop up in lots of different places, because I love to be helpful. So I'd love to connect with you guys there.
Awesome. I'll make sure that I put a lot of those links in our show notes.
Perfect.
Make it easy for people to find you. So yeah. Thank you again so much for this time. And I know that it's going to be so valuable to so many of our listeners, and can't wait to just hear how they're going to implement, especially those three C's that you dropped on us. Gold. Love it.
Yay. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.